I get the feeling sometimes as we read the Bible that maybe we understand it, and but maybe on the other hand we're missing parts of it because it's we're 2,000 years after the events, so maybe we're not really seeing things the way we should. And only cure I know for that problem is to read more Bible, so that's where we stand. For example, John chapter 1, verse 11, John writes, speaking of Jesus, he came to his own, and his own people did not receive him, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So Jesus came to his own people, and his own people did not receive him. And that's, we have to ask the question, why? Why would they not receive him? And I think that's the question that is trying to be answered in a lot of the Gospels, telling us, first of all, that he was rejected by his own people, and how that came about. So we've been going through miracles of Jesus. In one of the first miracles, or well, not the first one, but in the miracle, he delivers a man in the synagogue from a demon. But he was attracting attention, first of all, because he taught with authority, not like the scribes and the Pharisees, but he was an authoritative teacher, and that got people's attention. Then we read in the miracle where he healed the paralytic man that was let down through the hole in the roof, that there were people there listening to what he said, and they said, Jesus said blasphemous things. He was speaking blasphemy, and that they may have had a point had Jesus not been able to prove, to back up his point by healing the man that was paralyzed. And last week, we read mostly about the lame man at the pool of Bethesda. And that occurred on a Sabbath. It's not the first time Jesus had healed on a Sabbath. He delivered the man from the demon on a Sabbath. But that kind of went by pretty quickly. There was a man in the synagogue making a ruckus, and Jesus told the demon to go away and be quiet. So that might have slid by the people who were watching to see if he would heal on the Sabbath, since it went by so quickly. He also healed Peter's mother-in-law on a Sabbath, but that didn't take place in public. That was kind of in the privacy of Peter's house. But the man at the pool of Bethesda, that took place on a Sabbath. And it got attention because Jesus told the guy to pick up his bedroll and to go home, I suppose. And so the busybodies saw this guy carrying his bed in public on the Sabbath, and they asked him, who said you could do that? And the guy said, the man who healed me said I could do this, or told me to do this. And they missed the part where a guy was healed, and they went straight for the part where Jesus told somebody to pick up his bed and walk. They're a bit more concerned about keeping the niceties of the rules rather than the fact that here's a guy that can heal a lame man. That didn't get their attention for some reason. So let's look in Matthew chapter 12, starting in verse 9, and parallels in Mark chapter 3 and in Luke chapter 6. I've been reading all of the parallels for these miracles, and there are differences, different details in each one of the accounts. This one doesn't have anything I think anybody would say really conflicts. There will be in some of the upcoming miracles things that people say are contradictions. I don't think they are, but they are claimed to be sometimes. But there's Matthew, Mark, and Luke have different details, which it's been a long time now, nearly 40 years, I had a jury duty, and it was a manslaughter, drunk driving case, and they put all the witnesses on the stand, and all the witnesses, they told the story from a different angle. They all saw the same event, but they saw it literally from different directions, you know, north, south, east, and west. And then none of them told exactly the same story. They all fit together. They were all telling the truth. But they all had little details that the other ones wouldn't have known. And it was pretty interesting putting together the story of what happened, or at least what I think the story was. I've forgotten the details now. That was 40 years ago. The same thing with Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They all have different details. And maybe we have four Gospels so that we have a chance to read the different details and try to put it together, and we get to think about it more that way. Maybe that's one of the reasons. I don't know. But Matthew chapter 12, starting in verse 9. He went on from there and entered their synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" So that they might accuse him. He said to them, "Which one of you who has a sheep, if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not take hold of it and lift it out? Or of how much more value a man than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And the man stretched it out, and it was restored, healthy like the other. But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him how to destroy him. The shortest of the accounts of this, perhaps. Happens in the synagogue on a Sabbath, and there's a man there with a withered hand. I don't know what would cause your hand to be withered. I think another may have said it was paralyzed as well. But I'm envisioning, you see people on occasion that their hands are just like, you know, just made into a fist, and they can't straighten it out, and, you know, they have no control of their fingers, and it's just, I don't know what would cause that. I presume that this fellow had been in this condition a long time. I don't know if he could be born that way, or if he, you know, got it stuck between the boat and the dock one time, and it got crushed. I don't know. You know, there's, you know, a camel stepped on it. Who knows? You know, you could hurt yourself a lot of ways. But he's in the synagogue on the Sabbath. So in the Mark's version, Mark chapter 3, starting in verse 1, again he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, come here. And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at the hardness of their heart, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. And then Luke chapter 6, starting in verse 6. On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here." And he rose and stood there. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or destroy it?" And after looking around at them all, he said to him, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. I guess none of them say paralyzed. They all say withered. I'm just assuming paralyzed. So this happens on a Sabbath in the synagogue, and Jesus, Luke says, was teaching again. So that was his reason for being there, primarily was to teach. And a man was there, Luke says, whose right hand was withered. I'm guessing this hand was really disfigured, you could tell from a distance that something was wrong with this hand, and he'd been that way for a while, I'm presuming. Maybe all his life, who knows? And Luke adds that it was his right hand. Again, I've noticed this is the third time in these miracles that Luke adds just a little bit more medical detail than Matthew and Mark. I'm not sure that he consistently does that, but in these cases he has. And we know Luke as a physician, so maybe that makes a little sense. And the scribes and Pharisees watched him. So there were scribes and Pharisees there. The scribes made their living copying documents. Pharisees were one of the parties of the Jews. I didn't look it up in the Bible dictionary to give more detail than what we've heard, what you've always heard about Pharisees. But they were watching Jesus to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might find a reason to accuse him. We'll have a chance to talk more about the Sabbath in a few moments, but they're trying to trap him. They're looking for a way to have something to accuse Jesus of. They're not quite open-minded about all this, are they? They're looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, and disregarding the Sabbath is going to be the reason, they think. So Matthew then records, they ask him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And I suppose, depending on his answer, they're going to have a reason to accuse him. He either could say yes or no, I suppose. So they were trying to trap him in his words, first of all. My understanding is the Pharisees would forbid giving medical care on the Sabbath unless it was a matter of life and death. And this was certainly not a matter of life and death. The man's hand had been withered, I'm guessing, for a while. He'd found a way to survive. He would certainly live to the next day with a withered hand. But Jesus is going to confront their attitude about the Sabbath with this using this man with the withered hand as the example. Sabbath means a day of rest in Hebrew, I suppose. And it was intended as a memorial of God's work in the creation. This is part of the establishing the Sabbath in Exodus chapter 31 in verse 16 and 17 reads, therefore the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So the Sabbath was established as a memorial of God being creator. So every seventh day, that's one thing you should remember on the Sabbath, is that God is the creator. It is also then a memorial of the deliverance from Egypt in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 13 and through 15. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day, the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So it was, there may be other other reasons given for the Sabbath, but at least we have these two. It is a memorial to God's creation, and it is also a memorial to the deliverance from slavery in Egypt. I work with a Jewish fella who he's not an observant Jew. We haven't really talked about it. I'm not sure that he would be anything other than agnostic or atheist, but he happily tells me that he takes a day off every week. He is happy to rely on his Jewish heritage and take a day off, and he will tell people, "Nope, I don't work on that day." And that's probably a good thing. And he does it. He may not be Jewish in any other sense, but he will claim that heritage, and he will take a day off from work every week. I think he goes for Saturday. He'll make it Sunday if he has to do something on Saturday, I suppose. But so it's a good idea it's intended to straighten out your priorities. So God commanded the Israelites to observe the Sabbath. But it was also, and this is also in Exodus chapter 31, I read before starting in verse 16, but a few verses before that, starting in verse 12, "And the Lord said to Moses, you are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all you shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. You shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. Anyone who profanes it shall be put to death. Whoever does any work on it, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall be put to death." So it's enforced in Exodus by a death penalty. This is serious business, not working on one day a week. And in Jesus' time, apparently these Pharisees are happy to enforce the Sabbath. I don't know how many people were actually put to death because of working on the Sabbath. There was an account, probably in Exodus, of a guy collecting wood on the Sabbath that was stoned. But I don't remember anybody else in the Bible being put to death for breaking the Sabbath. But they had that threat to hold over people anyway. So there are Pharisees there waiting to see if Jesus will heal. And in Matthew, they ask him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Luke records, he knew their thoughts. Jesus knew the thoughts of the Pharisees. He knew they were just looking for a way to make an accusation. And they were looking for a way to accuse him so they could actually condemn him to death if they were still in a position to enforce the law of Moses. "And he said to the man with the withered hand, come and stand here. And he rose and stood there." So Jesus intentionally, he brings the guy forward. He points at a spot and says, stand right there. And I'm presuming everybody in the room knows this. They may know the man personally, but they know he's got a withered hand. Then in Mark, Jesus asks, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. They asked Jesus, "Is it lawful to heal a person, make a person well?" And Jesus ups the ante on them. He responds not to their question with an answer, but with another question. And he has a good example. He has a man there with a withered hand, and he asks the Pharisees, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" How could it possibly be right to not do good on the Sabbath? This is a day devoted to the Lord and memory of what God has done. Is it seem reasonable that it would be, it would never, it would not be the thing to do good on a day like that. The Pharisees thought they were going to trap Jesus in his words. Jesus turns the tables on them and confronts them with a similar kind of dilemma, but they don't answer. They stand there silent. Then Mark writes, "And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at the hardness of heart." This may be the only instance in the gospel where Jesus is reported to be angry. We often think of when he cleansed the temple that he was angry. But I went back and read those accounts, and it doesn't specifically say he's angry. It says he overturned the tables, and he drove out the animals and the money changers, and it says he made a whip of cords. I guess you could do all that and stay pretty calm, but we presume he was angry on that occasion. But this is the only account in the Gospels that I'm aware of where it specifically says that Jesus was angered. And he was angry, though, at their hardness of heart. It's hardness of heart that grieved him and made him angry. They had opportunity to change their minds and to agree with Jesus that it would be a lawful thing to do good on the Sabbath, but they wouldn't do it. They couldn't bring themselves to say that it's lawful to do good. So in Matthew it's recorded, Jesus then presents them another argument that's based on their own practice this time. "Which one of you who has a sheep, if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not take hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value is a man than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." It is very difficult to have a rule that has absolutely no exceptions. Even the Sabbath law. There are exceptions. If your sheep falls in a pit and it's endangered, then you can do the work of lifting your sheep out of the pit. You may be able to think of the rule that has absolutely no exceptions, but it's very difficult to think of one that you could live with and would have no exceptions. So the Pharisees made an exception. If there were emergencies that might occur on a Sabbath that might justify you doing some work that you would otherwise not be allowed to do on a Sabbath. They recognized that. But they weren't willing to recognize that doing good on the Sabbath was one of those things, I suppose. So Jesus argues from the lesser to the greater. If you will do this kindness to a sheep on the Sabbath, how much more importance is a man? So you should be willing to do good for a man on the Sabbath as well. Jesus might even take it further. He might say that you were expected to do good things on the Sabbath, not just allowed to if the occasion arose, but perhaps you should be looking to do good things on the Sabbath. After looking around at them all, this is Luke again. No, this is Matthew, I'm sorry. After looking around at them all, he said to the man with the withered hand, "Stretch out your hand," and he did so. And his hand was restored, healthy like the other. So first Jesus gets this guy with the withered hand up in front and says, asks him directly, "Is it right? Is it lawful to do good or to do harm?" And then they're looking to catch him healing on the Sabbath. Well, he does it. He right there in front of them. He confronts them directly with this. Tells the man to stretch out his hand. And you'll notice again, not only does Jesus teach with authority, he demonstrates with authority that it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath by doing a good thing on the Sabbath. And the fact that that this miracle can be done on the Sabbath kind of is an illustration of the fact that it is lawful. He's not just a regular man. No regular man can restore a guy with a withered hand like this to health. This could only happen with the approval of God. And if God approves of this miracle on the Sabbath, then it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Now, the guy with the withered hand, there's nothing said that about his attitude toward Jesus. Did he expect he could be healed? Did he desire to be healed? We don't have any indication one way or another. I don't guess Jesus would heal somebody against their will, but he heals this guy without, apparently, we don't have any indication that the guy expected this or was wanting Jesus to do it, although why would he turn it down? Which just reminds me of a movie I saw one time. I probably shouldn't mention it because it's not politically correct. Was that the Life of Brian? Is that the movie? No. Talking about the guy born in the manger next to Jesus. Yeah, it's a comedy. Yeah. Some lame beggar gets healed and he's mad about it because it took away his income because he can't be a beggar anymore. So anyway. So I guess there were people who were happy to be lame and beggars, but I don't know, maybe Jesus didn't heal those. Anyway, so back to this guy. This guy's hand was healed instantly, and apparently without a lot of fuss over him, he just said, "Stretch out your hand," and he stretched it out, and it was healed, and it was clearly healed for everyone to see, including the Pharisees, and this is Luke says, they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. Now, this demonstrates how hard their hearts were. Not only were they unwilling to agree that it's good to do, that it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath, but when Jesus shows them up like this and confronts them with their own misunderstanding of the Sabbath, it makes them mad. They have apparently no concern at all about this man with the formerly withered hand. They're mad. They're angry now at Jesus. Jesus was angry at hardness of heart. These guys are angry because they're personally insulted that Jesus would do this on a Sabbath. It's always dangerous to defy the people who think they are in charge. Whether they are in charge or not, it's a different question. And the Pharisees, this is Mark again, and the Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. And by destroy, they mean kill. They're thinking of ways to kill Jesus. You've been to church and you've got into a couple of fusses at church, maybe a semi-serious argument, but I've never left church thinking of how I'm going to kill somebody yet. So I got that going for me. Somebody else may have been thinking how they're going to kill me, but these guys left the synagogue and they're thinking of ways to kill Jesus. And in Mark, they're talking with the Herodians. Now, I looked this up in the Bible dictionary. The Herodians, that party among the Jews who were supporters of the Herodian family as the last hope of retaining for the Jews a fragment of national government, as distinguished from absolute dependence upon Rome as the province of the empire. So the Herodians, they supported keeping the Herod's family as kings, thinking, you know, it's better to have Herod and his family as kings rather than the Romans. Now, I So this makes things different, because before this point, we haven't read about Jesus being drug into these political arguments. He had plenty of religious arguments, healing on the Sabbath, and some of the things he taught. But now he's drug into the middle of this political argument as well, and I hadn't thought it through. So if you know more about politics than I do, for some reason, the Pharisees who want to kill Jesus for religious reasons are now on the same side as the Herodians, who are trying to maintain the family of Herod as rulers in the area. I don't know how what Jesus is doing would endanger the rule of the Herodian, of Herod's family. I don't know. Maybe they're thinking that the Romans are going to come. If Jesus makes too much of a fuss about something, the Romans are going to come and mess things up. But I don't know. I don't know that much about the politics of the day. But now the Herodians are involved, and I think they don't have any. Maybe it's just that they're happy to kill their enemies. Oh well. So the meaning of the sign. What is the meaning of this sign? Well, I think the meaning of the sign, it is right to do good on the Sabbath. It is lawful to do a good thing on the Sabbath. The Pharisees had distorted the purpose and the meaning of the Sabbath, and Jesus has come to show them that that they are misunderstanding the Sabbath. It is a lawful and good thing to do good on the Sabbath. Jesus came to do good and to work for benefit of men 7 days a week, and that includes the Sabbath. So that's the man with the withered hand. I wrote down a couple of paragraphs. These are not miracles that are of specific people, but again, Matthew chapter 12, and starting in verse 15, this is immediately after in the book of Matthew. Jesus, aware of this, that is the Pharisees' conspiracy to kill him, withdrew from there, and many followed him, and he healed them all and ordered them not to make him known. So Jesus became aware that his life is in danger in town, so he got out of town. I guess you're not obligated to stand and fight every fight. Taken to the hills might be a good strategy on occasion. And many people followed him, and he healed them all. So there are the miracles, and ordered them not to make him known. So he's trying to lay low for a while, I suppose. This was spoken to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. And now Matthew includes this quotation from Isaiah chapter 42. "Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved with whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel or cry aloud, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not quench, until he brings justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles will hope." That's Isaiah chapter 42. If you read it in Isaiah, it's very similar. "Behold my servant," this is Isaiah writing, "behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry aloud or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a faintly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth, and the coastlands wait for his law." So there's a few differences in Matthew's quotation of Isaiah and what we read in Isaiah, but I think Matthew was free to paraphrase on occasion, and maybe that's just Matthew's paraphrase. He's got a lot of it. You can match up word for word. But toward the last part of it, it looks like he was giving an interpretation of what Isaiah was saying. And since Matthew's an apostle, I don't think I'm going to complain about it. I think he's free to do that. Similarly, in Mark chapter 3, after this occasion on the Sabbath, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. Mark's a little bit more specific about where Jesus went. And the great crowd heard all that he was doing, and they came to him, and he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. For he had healed many, so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch him. And whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." And he strictly ordered them not to make him known. So the Pharisees are conspiring to kill him. Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, it says here. And the crowds are following him because of the healings they've seen. And they want to touch him because if they touch him, they'll be healed. And this is also in Luke chapter 6. It's not quite after verse 11, starting in verse 17. He came down with them and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, all who came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases, and those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. And all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came out from him and healed them all. I think the instance in Matthew and Mark are pretty much at the same time. In Luke, this may not be at exactly the same time, but it describes the same kind of attraction that Jesus had to a crowd, and they're trying to touch him. Because if they touch him, they'll be healed. And apparently that's true. It says, for power came out from him and healed them all. This will be a contrast, though, with the next miracle we're going to read about next week, where Jesus heals the centurion's servant. And not only does the centurion not try to touch Jesus or his servant or anybody, the centurion says, well, you don't even bother to come. You don't even have to be here. Just say the word. But that will be next week. We'll be in Jesus healing the centurion's servant. And again, this one is recorded in Matthew and Luke.